Up next on Please Explain, Robert Kenworthy from the Chemical Heritage Foundation explains how Teflon is made, how it's used, and why there are questions about whether it poses a health risk. And if you have a question, you can give us a call at 646-829-3985 or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And a reminder that on AM 820, you can hear live special coverage of the evolving events in the Middle East from BBC World Service. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.
WNYC support comes from Warner Brothers Pictures. Inception. From the mind of writer-director Christopher Nolan comes a world between dreams and reality. Inception. Now available on DVD and Blu-ray. 92nd Street Y. Presenting guitarist Elliot Fisk this Saturday at 8 p.m. in a program of Scarlatti, Bach, Chopin, and more. Tickets at 212-415-5500 or 92y.org/concerts. Fauna. A full-service avian store offering a selection of captive-raised birds, reptiles, amphibians, and fish. In-home grooming calls, aquarium setup and maintenance and behavior consultation available. 265 West 87th Street. More at faunanyc.com.
Drugs and alcohol have provided fuel for much of popular music, but so has getting clean. Today on Soundcheck, a look at the time-honored tradition of the Rehab album from Eminem to Justin Towns Earl. That's coming up at 2 and 10 on 93.9 FM WNYC. What's slippery, water-resistant, stable at high temperatures, and in a wide range of products, including fabrics, frying pans, and even pizza boxes? Well, if you said polytetrafluoroethylene, you'd be right. And if you said Teflon, you'd also be right. Joining me now on Please Explain to talk about Teflon is Bob Kenworthy, a chemist who worked in the chemical industry for four decades. He was hired by DuPont upon the completion of his degree and worked for them on finishes and polymers for 30 years. And then he spent time in the hazardous waste treatment and disposal industry before moving on to his current job at the Chemical Heritage Foundation, which is a library, museum, and center for scholars in Philadelphia. Welcome to our show.
Thank you very much, Lynn.
I was surprised to hear that Teflon described as a plastic. Is it?
Yes, it is. It's poly. That's the operative word for plastic, polytetrafluoroethylene. I think you can think of it like ethylene being a very simple molecule with two carbons and four hydrogens, and then you replace those four hydrogens with fluorine, and you get tetrafluoroethylene. And under the right circumstances, you can cause that molecule to link up with itself head to tail and get a long chain of carbons, each of whom has two fluorine atoms attached to it, and that's a plastic.
And this is an entirely man-made thing? There's nothing natural about it?
Nothing natural about it other than the elements themselves. That's correct.
How did it come to be developed?
Well, back in the 1930s, there was a chemist working for the DuPont company in the refrigeration gases business.
Roy Plunkett.
Roy Plunkett was his name, yes, exactly. And Roy was trying to make a new refrigeration gas to replace some of the more hazardous materials that were used as compression gases in mechanical refrigeration at that time, things like ammonia and sulfur dioxide. He was actually working on chlorofluorocarbons, that is to say carbon atoms that have both chlorine and fluorine attached to them, because they're good gases. So he was trying to chlorinate a fluorinated molecule, that is tetrafluoroethylene, the gas, and he ran out of time, so he made an extra batch of tetrafluoroethylene and was going to store it overnight in an ice bath. But when he came back the next morning, realized that the gas cylinder in which he had stored it didn't have any gas in it, and yet it weighed the same as it weighed before, so something was wrong. He and his assistant sawed the cylinder in half and saw this waxy white solid inside the cylinder, and that was Teflon.
So it was totally accidental, but when did they realize that it had all of the qualities that made it into something that had a lot of applications?
Oh, not for several years after that. Remember, Roy was assigned to work on gases. He wasn't assigned to work on plastics. So What he did was he scraped some of it off, and he saw that it wouldn't dissolve in anything, and that it didn't melt readily, and it was really slippery, and water wouldn't stick to it at all, beat it up and flowed right off of it. And he said, this is an interesting material, and then turned it over to other people to pursue that, and went back to his work with gases.
And did they figure out right away that this could have some interesting applications?
Well, yeah, I think they figured out right away that it was interesting. The applications came fundamentally with the urgencies of war that occurred a few years later, and the fact that it was chemical resistant and really slippery made it a natural for chemical process vessels, tubing and reaction vessels that needed to be protected from the chemicals inside, the high-strength acids and things like that, and also as a lubricant that stays where you put it. You know, think of it this way: if you put grease on a joint, the grease can move around and slip out and ooze out all over the place. But if you lubricate that same joint with a plastic coating made out of Teflon, it stays where you put it, and it works real well that way.
I've read that a polytetrafluoroethylene has excellent dielectric properties. What does dielectric mean?
Well, there's two phases to that.
I know what a dielectric is.
right. Well, in this case, what we're talking about is a plastic that is an excellent insulator. That is to say, electricity does not flow through it. So as a consequence, you can use it as wire insulation, or you can use it as the plastic interleaf between two conductors, which is a diode, if you please, or a electronic device that allows you to channel the current exactly where you want it. It's the fundamental building block of printed circuits the kind of things that make our computers work.
My guest is Bob Kenworthy, and we're talking about Teflon on today's Please Explain. So here, this thing was created by accident, and people discovered that it has all sorts of other applications, and it was the trademark was registered as Teflon. I don't know where the name comes from, in 1945, after the war.
Correct. I don't know whether anybody at DuPont called it Teflon before the trademark was registered. Maybe not. It's one of those manufactured words, you know, tetrafluoroethylene, TEF, mm-hmm. And then DuPont, in all of its brand names in that time frame, put the LON ending on it, you know, Orlon, Nylon, etc.
It's been described as being ubiquitous because it has all these different qualities. It's used as a carpet treatment. It's used in, as you say, pipes, electronics, clothing. Isn't it in Gore-Tex?
Yes, it fundamentally is Gore-Tex. What Bob Gore did when he invented the material called Gore-Tex was he took PTFE fine powder, and that's a form of the PTFE or Teflon, and pressed it into a sheet in a way that he also stretched it longitudinally and latitudinally, stretched it in both dimensions, and made a membrane, if you please, or a sheet of expanded PTFE. And that expanded PTFE is microporous in a way that it allows water to, it keeps water from going through as liquid water, but it allows water vapor to go through as a gas, which means you can use it in sportswear, and it's really comfortable because it will keep you dry, and yet when you perspire, your perspiration wicks away from your body. So it's almost perfect in that regard.
And it's also used in sports stadiums. I understand the roof of the Metrodome in Minneapolis, which unfortunately caved in this year, but that's for, I doubt if it was Teflon's fault, is made of a substance comprised of Teflon-coated fiberglass. But how did it wind up being used in frying pans? How soon after 1945 did somebody realize that it could be used for nonstick cooking?
I don't know the exact date on that, Leonard. But it was well after the war before those kinds of applications were even considered. And As I recall the history there, the first attempt was to produce a frying pan that would allow you to cook without using grease, without using oil, because of low cholesterol or fat-free cooking. And that commercially was a failure because the population really didn't care about that. But then you realize that if you add a little bit of cooking oil to it, that surface becomes really slick and you can cook a fried egg on it, and you don't even need a spatula to get it out of the skillet. You can just slide it right out. So non-stick cooking then became the commercial reality in the 1950s.
Our number here is 646-829-3985. I'm talking with Bob Kenworthy, who is a chemist at the Chemical Heritage Foundation, which is a library, museum, and center for scholars in Philadelphia. When did the safety of Teflon begin to be questioned? And what's the basis of those concerns?
Well, I think the earliest concern was when Teflon-coated cookware or PTFE-coated cookware became very popular and got into a lot of homes. And unfortunately, things happen in homes. And one of the things that happened was that people would allow their skillets to go dry on a cooktop, allow them to go dry, and then they'd actually burn up. And remember, these are aluminum skillets, so they will disintegrate at high temperatures or cook temperatures. And what people found out was that PTFE-coated skillets, when they burned up, emitted toxic gases such that the birds in the house would actually die, parrots and the like, pet birds, which, you know, like the canary in a coal mine situation. That was the first indication that something was, in the degradation of Teflon, there was some toxic material.
Well, the Environmental Protection Agency sought fines in 2004, totaling millions of dollars. In fact, the highest fines ever sought by the EPA from DuPont on the grounds that it failed for two decades to report possible health and environmental problems linked to the perfluorooctanoic acid and its salts that are part of Teflon.
Yeah, that was the second point that I was going to get to there, is that perfluorooctanoic acid, or C8 is the shorthand that many people use for that, is a totally synthetic molecule. It doesn't occur in nature. And there was concern raised that this material was found in the blood of the factory workers at the Teflon manufacturing facility. And nobody knew what to make of that, so they went to try to study it and were looking around to find a control population that would could be compared to the workers at the factory. And what they found was that essentially everybody has C8 in their blood. So the EPA got very concerned about that and very concerned about the fact that it's so pervasive and also so persistent that we all are carriers, if you please. So far, there have been no deleterious effects found as far as human health is concerned, but there's enough concern about any synthetic molecule that exists in that level that DuPont and other manufacturers have agreed to phase out that manufacturing route as far as producing Teflon is concerned.
But does DuPont even make it anymore? Didn't Koch Industries purchase the Invista division of DuPont in 2003, the owners of Teflon and Lycra, the Koch brothers, who are kind of controversial political figures, perhaps the most important generous opponents of climate change legislation in America? I don't know if that's linked to Teflon, but it would be in some people's minds.
No, I don't think that's linked to Teflon. The Koch purchase was really more of fibers of DuPont divesting of the fibers business, more so than the polymers business.
Oh, so the how Teflon is used in clothing would be the Koch side, and the cookware would still be the DuPont side?
Correct.
Several listeners have written in to say that they've switched to cast iron pans out of concern, mm-hmm. and Nora Ephron, in her latest book, has a one of the things she writes about. She says, heat up your Teflon pan until the carcinogenic fumes emanate are visible or something like that. So this has entered into the public consciousness as a serious problem with Teflon. A lot of people have gotten rid of their Teflon pans.
Yes, I think it is a serious issue, and for people who are really pristine about their cooking, I think nonstick coated cookware is generally a thing of the past for them. For the most of us, I don't think it represents a health hazard, but it does represent something added to cooking that you don't have to add to it if you stay with stainless steel or cast iron.
So there are alternatives, but Teflon, does it matter whether the Teflon that I buy is that really cheap pan that costs $1.50 at the 99-cent store or the really expensive one that I get at Williams-Sonoma?
Yes, it does. The really inexpensive pan is coated in such a way that the coating is pretty easy to scrape off. And if you're not careful to use plastic cooking utensils and soft materials like that, you will scrape the nonstick surface off of the pan and end up making the pan useless and eating a lot of the PTFE yourself because it comes out in your food.
And what would happen then? Then we are eating something that's a little dangerous, aren't we?
Well, the polymer itself isn't toxic at all. I mean, that's been pretty well established. It pretty well passes right through your body and doesn't do anything on the way. So eating a little bit of Teflon polymer, it doesn't seem to be a problem. The issue is whether there are unreacted monomers in it or whether there are degradation products if you've heated it up around 600 degrees and you start to actually degrade the polymer into smaller molecular weight chunks that might be more absorbed by your body.
My guest is Bob Kenworthy, who is a chemist currently at the Chemical Heritage Foundation, Library, Museum, and Center for Scholars in Philadelphia. We're talking about Teflon on today's Please Explain, and our number here is 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. I've read that using oil to coat Teflon is a good way to maintain it and prevent it from flaking. Is that true?
Yes. I think everybody who makes nonstick coated cookware today recommends cooking with oil. And the first step in any cooking process in a fry pan of that kind is to coat the entire surface with oil. Now, you can either do that with a spray bottle or with a piece of wax paper, taking a small amount of oil and rubbing it around on the surface. Or if you really want to use a lot of oil, just pour it in and slosh it around.
Now, why is it used in things like pizza boxes? What qualities does it have to make that, to be given that application?
Well, I think that's just release properties, you know, some nonstick, if you please. You know, when you take a greasy pizza and you put it in the bottom of an uncoated box and slice it up, you end up with a lot of grease soaked into the cardboard. And sometimes the cheese and the like sticks to the box and it gets a little hard to get out. So if you put a small coating of a fluoropolymer release agent on that cardboard and the pizza slides right out.
Has all of the bad publicity hurt sales of Teflon?
I really don't know. It's been so long since I've been associated with any kind of commercial side of fluoropolymers that I don't know. It doesn't seem that way because I look at the number of manufacturing plants that are being built around the world, and frankly, most of them are in Asia now. It seems to be expanding at the rate it was expanding 20 years ago.
Let's take some calls. Ed from Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you. I'm concerned about the disposal of Teflon. Lots of products are incinerated, which probably gets well much higher than 600 degrees. And when those precipitate out, can they get into the food products? Can they get into what cattle feed on, or what other animals feed on, or even vegetables that are growing.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate concern. As long as the waste disposal facility is using good high temperature incineration with stack gas scrubbing, that shouldn't be a problem. And what I mean by that is, yes, the incineration temperature is up around 1,800 degrees, so it is designed to break the molecules down into their elemental components. But then as the gases from that process go up the exhaust stack, they are sprayed with cooling water and inorganic chemicals that make the acids, the hydrofluoric acid and the hydrochloric acid that is generated by the incineration process, it turns those into salts. It turns those into calcium fluoride or calcium chloride. And then those salts precipitate and are landfilled in a chemical landfill so that they don't end up in anybody's food chain.
Thank you for your call. Sue from the West Village, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. I was just wondering, recently I had a leak in my ceiling in my apartment and I ran out of buckets, so I used my Teflon pot. And so the water was dripping down into it, and it developed like this yellow fur.
Do you know anything about that, Bob?
Yeah.
I really don't know. At the temperatures of leaky rainwater, I'd be surprised if the Teflon changed at all. I wouldn't know what the yellow fur would be, other than it might be something that actually came from the building materials that the water was going through on its way into the fry pan.
On the other hand, Sue, you may very well have come upon something, and remember, Teflon was discovered by accident. Maybe you've discovered a way to create a synthetic fur. Thank you so much for calling us.
Thank you. No problem. Have
a listener says there are any number of new eco-friendly nonstick pans that are supposed not to have the same problems associated with Teflon. What do they use?
Well, there are other polymer materials that are used as food release polymers, polyether ether ketone materials, or PEEK, is used in that regard. But there are also some inorganics that are used that seem to be effective, you know, hard-coat anodized products of one kind or another that have better release properties than just raw stainless steel or raw cast iron.
Now, you said that the problem started to rise when they realized that people were cooking at very high temperatures and birds were dying. Is there an ideal temperature to cook at? Must you always use a medium flame or less?
Well, no. Teflon really doesn't degrade until you get it well above 600 degrees Fahrenheit, and I think most recipes call for cooking at lower temperatures than that.
Monica in Brooklyn says, asks if it's okay to put Teflon pans into the dishwasher.
Sure. Dishwashers always stay below 212 degrees. I mean, you're not washing your dishes with steam, so you're operating at temperatures around 200 degrees at most, and that's well within the safety range.
We go now to Tom, is it? Sam. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks so much for taking my call. You know, one of my favorite movies called Ronin, starring Robert De Niro, there's a point in the movie where he's removing a bullet that he was shot with, and then once he removes it, he looks at it and grimaces and notices that it had been coated with Teflon. And I always wondered what sort of properties Teflon could impart to a bullet if coated with it.
I think, for the most part, as I recall those experiments with munitions, is the reason for putting a nonstick coating on a bullet is so that the bullet will penetrate through armor or through protective clothing and actually get to its intended target, even though there's some sort of protective armament or protective clothing between the bullet and the person. You know, we think of Kevlar protective vests that protect law enforcement officers from being shot. Well, Teflon-coated bullets was one of the issues that surfaced whether they would be effective in actually being able to shoot through a Kevlar vest. And I think both the development of Kevlar protective clothing and the outlawing of nonstick coated munitions have kept that hazard at a minimum.
We have very little time, but a number of listeners have asked about using Teflon in car engines. Is it done?
It's used in wiring of car engines, yes. Some of the wiring systems with automotive engines contain Teflon because it's such a good polymer at high temperatures, but not as a lubricant.
Bob Kenworthy is a chemist who worked at DuPont for 30 years. Now he is at the Chemical Heritage Foundation, which is a library, museum, and center for scholars in Philadelphia. And we've been talking with him and you on today's Please Explain About Teflon. Bob, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Leonard, it's my pleasure. Really enjoyed it.